Hello, and welcome to the Empowerography Podcast. This is a platform created for women's voices to be heard and a place to share their stories, journeys, and successes with the world for the purpose of helping other women who might be on similar journeys. We are empowering women one episode at a time. I'm your host, Brad Walsh, so kick back, grab one of your favorite beverages, and enjoy the stories. The world needs to hear your message and your story, so don't deny the world of that gift within you that the universe has given you. Someone out there needs to hear your story because it will support them in feeling hope, inspired, and even transformed. Do you want to discover how I help get my clients out of their own way, show up, and confidently share their message? I would love to extend an invitation to you to join me in my free masterclass, Start Your Own Podcast from Idea to Implementation, on Wednesday, April 5th at 1 p.m. Eastern. You can find the registry link in the show notes. Hope to see you there. Hello there, Brad Walsh here, your host of the Empowerography Podcast. Today, my guest is Jacqueline Gallo. She is a two-time best-selling author, a podcast host, a life coach, and a TEDx speaker. Welcome, Jacqueline. I am so happy and excited to have you here. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
It is my honor and my pleasure. Thank you for taking and making the time to be here with me today. I am so excited to jump in and share all about the beautiful light you put out into the world through the work you do and your story and your journey. So with that being said, let us jump right in. I would love to know, Jacqueline, what were you doing for a living before you made the jump into the entrepreneurial world? And what was the catalyst for that shift for you?
Yeah, so my journey is probably a lot different than the average person. I was a college student. And I was exploring the career world. I thought that I wanted to work in corporate America, do a marketing job. I was a marketing and international business double major. So one summer, I had a summer internship at a big company, and I thought it was my dream job. My goal was to work really hard and impress enough people that maybe they would offer me a job offer the next year when I graduated. And about 6 weeks into the internship, I started to get this feeling. Is this it? Is this every day for the rest of my life? Is this the dream? And so I started small, just exploring. I would meet with other departments and I would ask them about what they do. Maybe this isn't just the right specific line of work for me, the specific day to day, right? But the more people I talked to, the more people I met with, I realized that it was all kind of the same in a sense. And I was missing something that I was really seeking, which was the ability to set and achieve my own goals. There was this internal sense of fulfillment I was seeking that I just wasn't getting. And so for me at the time, it had nothing to do with money. It really didn't have anything to do with freedom or flexibility either at that time. At 21 years old, I enjoyed going to the office 9 to 5. I enjoyed being social. It was really just during the day, I couldn't feel fulfilled. I wasn't challenged. I wasn't going for these big goals. And even if I was going for goals, it was goals that someone else was setting about something I thought was stupid, for the record. And so I decided one day driving home from that internship that I was going to start a business. But I had no business ideas. I had no real expertise. And I figured, okay, well, maybe I should just write down my ideas. And so every day in a notebook, the last month of that internship, it was August of 2016, I would write down business ideas. And I decided that when I moved back into college for my senior year, I was going to pick an idea and run with it, because I figured even if that idea didn't work, I would probably learn enough to start another business, because I knew that I didn't want to get a job when I graduated. And I wanted to be able to say, hey, instead of taking a job, I'm doing this business. And long story short, I tried multiple ideas that failed over a span of about 2.5 years. One was a physical product that failed. One was an app that failed, all based on things that inspired me. So a lot of my early ideas were based on my struggle with an eating disorder in college and wanting to help more women have a more balanced relationship with food in their body. And so I was inspired by that personal experience. And while those endeavors failed, they set me up for everything I'm doing now, even though it was really, really challenging at the time. So that's kind of the story of a little bit of the early beginnings.
So pretty much right out of school into entrepreneurship.
Yeah, exactly.
That is a very different journey than most people, because most people get out of this, out of school and into the corporate world, get stuck in that job, get the golden handcuffs on, and then just reach a point where it's like, fuck this, I'm done. I've had enough. I'm branching out on my own.
Yeah, I feel like that's the most common path. And it's funny because my husband and I talk about it a lot because we've taken different paths, and he works in the corporate world and he's very entrepreneurial, and he'll come home and tell me things. And I'm like, I just can't relate to that because I've never had a job. And then we'll start cracking up. And we think it's funny, but
it is pretty funny, actually. The fact that you've never had like a normal job is pretty funny, actually. Jacqueline, what drives, motivates, and inspires you to keep going and excelling at all that you do?
Yeah, I think it's so important to be motivated because entrepreneurship is really hard and pursuing any dream is hard. I think that that's something just to accept up front. There's going to be a lot of challenges. And honestly, if I knew how long it was going to take me to get to where I wanted to be, and I still am not, you know, where I want to be because my goals are always growing. But in some sense, you know, the life I'm living today is something I'd be so excited about years ago. But if I knew how long it was going to take and how hard it was going to be, I don't even know if I would have done it, really. Like, I mean, it's been so challenging and thrown me for so many loops. And I would say that the number one thing that keeps me going is I don't want to sell myself short. And I know deep down that my full potential has this in it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know exactly what it looks like. I don't know all the answers, but I grew up in a household with a father who had a lot of regret. I remember when I was 7 years old, my dad and I were running errands on a Saturday, and we were driving around town, and he pointed out this building and he said, "See that building right there?" He said, "I almost bought it when I was 30 years old and I wanted to open a deli and a seafood market, but my father talked me out of it and it's the biggest regret of my life." And I remember being, you know, this little girl saying like, "Daddy, what's regret mean?"
Yeah.
And, you know, he didn't even have to answer because just his face and the look in his eyes, it spoke to me. And from that moment on, I decided I didn't want to live with regrets. And so even from a very young age, I've always been one to put myself out there and pursue things and be willing to fail, because the pain that I saw my dad experience and continue to experience, I mean, it's a conversation topic still to this day quite frequently. I never want to feel that. Yeah. And so every time I've been very close to giving up, and there have been times where, I mean, I'm researching jobs, I'm working on my resume, like I've been very close to quitting, but I've never been able to do it because I just know that I'll sell myself short and I'll have that feeling of regret.
I think every entrepreneur goes through that multiple times throughout their entrepreneurial journey. It is, I think, pretty much right up there. Next to raising kids, it is one of the hardest things to do because you are pushed and stretched and challenged. You're using muscles you've never used before. It is one hell of a fucking test being an entrepreneur. It is hard. And you said, do you really believe that if you knew before that you might not have done it? I mean, ignorance is bliss, I guess. So it worked out the way it was supposed to. But do you really think that?
No. But I think that what I thought at the time it was going to be, and every new idea I have, still, I'm like, I'm just going to add this new product or service or do this thing.
Yeah.
And it just always sounds so easy in my head. And then I start doing it. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so hard. My husband and I, we also own a local ice cream and water ice shop in our town. We bought it a year ago. So we're like new in the game of being small business owners. And my mom asked me yesterday, actually, if you knew how much work was going to be involved versus how much you're actually making on a small business, would you have bought the business? And I said to her, you know, if I knew that I was going to make $0 on this business for the next 20 years, I would still buy it, because the lessons that I am learning, the relationships I am building are worth hundreds of millions of dollars. I just feel like they are the gold, the value. So
I don't think you could put a price tag on those.
Exactly. So as much as, oh, this is so hard, I feel the same way about my business. It's not about the money. The lessons are so much more valuable.
Yeah, you learn a fuck of a lot. That's for sure. So I want to jump into talking about your coaching. How would you describe your unique philosophy and approach to life coaching, and how did you develop it?
Mm. Yeah. Well, I've been trained, so I think that that's important, learning the basics of what is coaching and how do you help someone find kind of their own truths instead of just coming in with your own opinions, right, about what's best for them. Because I think that's something I personally experienced as this young entrepreneur. I was naive. Yeah. I was malleable. I wanted to learn. And so every coaching program and course I could take, I would just blindly take and I would blindly follow advice. And it didn't work for me. It wasn't right for me. It wasn't what I wanted. It didn't fit into my vision or just my operating system as a human being. Yet I would try it anyway. And so that's something I learned from experience and also training of helping people to really figure out what's best for them. So my podcasts and my speeches and my clients, it's not about this is the one path. You should become an entrepreneur. You should do this or you should do that. It's what sparks your light. What makes you feel excited about your life and how do we figure that out? And so I think that that's something that shouldn't be unique, but somehow is, because everyone has these loud opinions on what other people should do with their life, especially yes. on social media, in podcasts, right? It's like, be an entrepreneur, buy a small business, start a business, do this, do affiliate marketing, do X, do Y. And so my approach just isn't like that. The other thing that I think makes it unique, I like to look at what my audience says mm-hmm. and really understand like, what do they actually get from me? And so recently I did this deep dive in all of my podcast reviews and yeah. I looked at common words and themes. And the number one thing that I saw over and over and over again was new perspectives. I don't know where these new perspectives come from. I'm just a very spiritual person that thinks mm-hmm. a lot and reflects a lot. I journal more than anyone I know. And I share. I'm really open and vulnerable to sharing my life experiences. And I know I'm not the only person in the world to do that, but somehow I guess some of the ways that I share them in resonate with people. Yeah. And so, just giving people a different perspective, I think, than maybe they naturally have is something mm-hmm. that is natural to me, I guess.
Yeah. We're constantly bombarded with, you need to do this. This is the way you got to do this. This is the way you got to do that. And we have to remember that everyone is a unique individual and what works for one person doesn't necessarily work for another. It may, but probably not, you know, and the fact that, listen, entrepreneurship is not for the faint of heart. It's not for everybody. Not everybody can or wants to or should be an entrepreneur. It's a tough fucking road. You got to be patient as hell. And there are people that just don't want that. They're happy in a 9-to-5 or whatever it is that they're doing. It's not, everyone's not cut out for it. Plain yeah. and simple.
Yeah. Right? And if everyone was meant to be an entrepreneur, all businesses would fail because we need employees.
Exactly. Right? We do. We need the ditch diggers. We need the people working at McDonald's. We need the people working at Walmart and all of those things. And if that makes them happy, Who is anyone to say you need to be an entrepreneur? If they're happy doing that job, then why not? We need that. The economy would crumble if we didn't have all of these other people.
Totally, totally agree.
Now, through many conversations that I've had with women through the podcast who are coaches, I've heard a lot of them say that most, if not all, coaches go through their own personal struggles and journeys before making the leap into coaching. I mean, we're all human beings. We've all been through our shit. We've all had our different struggles in life as human beings. But what I've found through these conversations and with most of the people I speak with who are now coaches, their personal struggle or journey was the catalyst for moving into the coaching world. So can you share a little bit about your own personal journey that led you into the coaching world?
Absolutely. So for me, it really was failing as an entrepreneur and feeling like I was a failure. I wasn't good enough. Maybe I didn't have what it takes. Something was fundamentally flawed with me. I had this really interesting experience in life where up until college, if I gave something my all and worked really hard for it, it usually worked out. I don't know if that's because school came easy to me or, you know, I had certain character traits or what it was, but pretty much everything I did, whether it was, you know, academics, a club, a sport, not that I was the top player or anything, but I would have a great time and I would get some playing time on the team and I would get an A in the class and I would get selected to be the leader of that club, right? And so I created this association in my brain that if I just work hard at something, then I'll succeed. And so then when I started my first business and I worked really hard and I failed, I thought, okay, the problem wasn't the hard work. The problem must be me. So instead of blaming the idea, the strategy, all of these other things, I blamed myself. And I started to feel just really confused about my self-worth, about my ability to achieve my goals. You know, was I cut out for this? And then I tried again, and my second idea also failed. And at this point, I had spent close to $50,000, mostly other people's money that I had raised on Kickstarter, borrowed on credit cards. So that was stuff I had to pay back, borrowed from my parents, made a little bit waitressing at college that I saved up as well. But, you know, I felt embarrassed. I felt shame. And I now had debt to pay back. I just really questioned my own compass and this intuition that had guided me to this place and if I was really enough to make it happen. And through that process, I took this period of time, about 30 days between my startup idea that was an app that once I decided this is not going anywhere, we're not going to put $100,000 more into this, let's just walk away and more losses, and starting coaching and speaking kind of my next idea. I took about a month. I didn't know how long I was going to take. I didn't know what I was going to do. Lucky enough to live at home with my parents, so I didn't really have any major bills. So I just would wake up every day and I would journal and I would read self-help books and I would try to figure out what the heck is going on in here. And I realized that my biggest problem was my relationship with failure, my fear of failure. And it had become proven true. I had life experience to prove that I was a failure and I did fail. And so having to reframe my definition of failure, having to start to see the journey and the experiences I was going on differently changed everything for me. And when I was able to really do that and honor that and be proud of it, like I found ways to tell people about my journey and say it in a really proud way and mean it instead of being embarrassed and shameful and hiding. I remember I would go to doctor's appointments, like, you know, the normal checkup, and they'd say, oh, what are you doing? They write it on your chart.
Yeah.
Jacqueline works for blah, blah, blah company.
And yeah.
I used to be so embarrassed. Versus when I reframed that definition, I was so proud and I was telling them about my entrepreneurial ventures and what I was doing next. And so I just started to see it more and more in my day to day that I really was changing that relationship. And so that's where I started. I just started talking about it. I started talking about my personal growth and how I was seeing failure differently. And I actually didn't think it was going to be a business at all. I thought I was going to come up with some other product idea or something else. And this was just something I was sharing to help people who knew me, people who followed me on the internet that personally knew me. But it started catching, and I then heard about, randomly came across by fate, that you could be a public speaker and actually get paid. So I thought, I'd love to speak about this failure thing. And so I booked my first speech at a local college. And so just going from there, that same speech many years later has been tweaked and changed through the life lessons that I've been through in the years since. But that is my number one booked keynote, is about failure and resilience still to this day. And it is still a topic that is so important to me from those lessons. So I totally agree that every single person who helps other people probably has gone through their own struggles. And I think that the thing they're best at helping with and explaining is something they've lived through and something that they know what it feels like to feel that way.
Absolutely. Excuse me. I had a woman on a while back. I released her episode a couple of weeks ago, and her whole thing is make friends with failure. Failure is your friend. You have to embrace it because you can't avoid it in life. It's going to happen. Yeah. And you need to get on board and embrace it. It's okay. As long as you can extract the lesson from it and walk away and use that lesson to move forward, to do better, that's all that matters. Failure is part of entrepreneurship. Failure is part of life. It's a huge part of entrepreneurship. As you've just explained, we all deal with it. We all go through it, and it's okay. It doesn't mean you're less than. It just means you're learning. That's all.
100%. And without the failures, I wouldn't be here. And so one of the biggest personal takeaways for me is that failure can often be redirection, and it can be a divine plan for you. It can be a blessing in disguise. And that's something now, sometimes when I'm in it, I think, or just when things go wrong in life, it's changed my whole mindset. I'm 35 weeks pregnant, and earlier this week I was sick. I think I had the flu or something. And I am like, okay, I have not been sick in years, yet I get sick when I'm this pregnant, like can't sleep, you know, all these things. And my mindset is immediately negative, just being human being. You know, why is this happening to me? I haven't even gone anywhere. I've been like nesting in my house. I'm like, where did I even get sick? I'm so annoyed. And then I think to myself, you know, what if my baby is going to come across the same exact illness in 2 months, and the antibodies that I've given my baby from dealing with this sickness in pregnancy will keep my baby healthy? What if I was going to go to a workout class, but what if in that workout class I was going to go to on Monday, my water was going to break and I was going to go into premature labor? But God said, you know what? You're not ready yet, honey. Let's slow you down. We know you're going to go to that workout class unless you really don't feel well. So here you go. And I came up with all these silly scenarios because of those failures. I know it sounds silly, but because of those failures so many years ago, every single time I face an inconvenience, a struggle, a challenge, I'm able to see it differently. And so it doesn't mean it is any less terrible. Like being 35 weeks pregnant, not really wanting to take medicine, so just sitting there like really sick, was terrible. But having the attitude that, you know what, maybe this is happening for me, that I only learned from those failures, is honestly the biggest blessing in the world.
That's an important thing. And it's not silly, because you're right. These things are happening for a reason. My dad always said, what's meant for you will not go by you. So it obviously was not meant to happen. You weren't meant to go to the class. You needed to go through this for whatever reason. It's about figuring out what the reasoning is, taking the lesson in that, finding the silver lining, I think is important. And it's hard to do when you're in the shit. It's hard to take a step back and look in at the situation and find the silver lining. But I guarantee you, every fucking situation, no matter what it is that you go through, there is a silver lining in it. There is a lesson there for you. It's just a matter of digging and finding it and taking it away.
100%. I love it.
How have these experiences then helped shape the Jacqueline you are today, both personally and professionally?
Oh gosh, I truly just wouldn't be me. I think I've always been positive. I've always been upbeat. I read The Secret at 16. My senior year of high school, I started every single morning sending my girlfriends quotes, positive quotes for the day so we could end our senior year, you know, on a good note. So I've always been positive and happy, but I'm so much more resilient and flexible. I would say those are the words to life's circumstance. And I know that I can be happy even in pretty challenging or crappy or non-ideal situations. And the more I see other adults behave in the same situations, it's puzzling to me. It's so puzzling. For example, this was probably 2 years ago. My husband and I had a wedding in Tennessee, a friend of his, years prior. And we were the only people that we knew going to this entire wedding. It was in a small town in Tennessee. So we had to take a connecting flight. They didn't have any direct flights, the whole thing. So we get stranded in the Atlanta airport overnight. Flight is delayed, you know, the whole thing. Our luggage was one of those mini planes where your luggage is like packed because there's not enough room. And so we didn't have our luggage. It's like somewhere missing. And all of these people are screaming, throwing temper tantrums at these poor flight attendants who do not decide when the plane leaves and if it doesn't. And their day is so ruined. And we're the ones who have a wedding to be at in the morning, right? And I'm sure everyone has different excuses. And some people maybe have really gone through something. Maybe someone lost a loved one or have a real reason to be there, something really important. But that being said, screaming about it's not going to get you any there faster. You should rent a car and drive because you could have been there in 5 hours. We looked it up. So my husband and I just go. We don't even approach the flight attendants. We go to the nearest hotel. We pay for the room. And this is a privilege that we could just pay for the room and not worry about it. Of course, I did get reimbursed for the room later by the airline. But, you know, we go. We don't have any luggage. So we just have our clothes, no brushed teeth, nothing, you know. you just go with it, right?
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, I feel really sad for all those people. And I feel like I used to be one of those people. Before I went through all of these struggles building my business and failing because I didn't know how to be happy in situations that didn't go the way I wanted them to. But because so many situations didn't go the way I wanted them to, and I didn't want to be unhappy for years in my life, I chose to learn how to be flexible. I chose to learn how to adapt to different situations. And so, and again, another silly real life example, but that's how I think it shaped me. I think it's made me flexible. And if I could give that gift to everyone in the world, I would just bottle it up and hand it out to everyone, because I think it's such a blessing, because we're all going to go through things that are unplanned, that are
for sure. Of course, it's hard. It's hard to do that. It's hard to get into that headspace where you have the self-awareness. Wait a minute. What good is this going to do? Like getting pissed off and yelling at someone who has no control over it. And speaking of control, let's be honest. The only thing that we as humans have control over is our reaction to situations. We can't control someone else's reaction. We can't control what someone else does. We can't control someone else's feelings. We can't control an airplane getting grounded because of whatever. You gotta give it up to the fact that you gotta trust and allow, and you only have control over what you or how you react to situations and how you react to people. That's it. But it's a hard lesson to learn, and it's hard to get into that headspace and accept that. It takes
constant work. It's not like something I'm always imperfect at, right? Sometimes I'm like, shouldn't have reacted that way, right? Like, you should have went to the bathroom and took three deep breaths before you spoke, right? So we're all human, but the more you can practice it, the easier it gets.
For sure. What is it that sets you and the work you do as a coach, Jacqueline, apart from other coaches? Why would they choose to work with you over someone else?
Yeah, I think they just like my perspective and my style and my delivery. I think that we're all unique as individuals, right? No two people have the same DNA. So, you know, I think it's really interesting in a world where there's a lot of competition and a lot of people feel like, I don't know, there's too much competition, or they don't want to encourage other people to be doing what they are doing. Whereas I just feel like, let's have as many people as possible doing this positive, uplifting work, because nobody has my DNA. Nobody has everything about the way that I speak, the way that I coach, the stories I have, you know, the life experiences, and those things are just going to resonate with certain people, and they won't resonate with other people, and that's okay. So it's really just, I try to build a community of people who, for some reason, the way that I say it, the way that I explain it, it clicks for them in their brain, and maybe similar learning styles, or maybe it's, you know, this is a weird one. People will say to me, I love the sound of your voice. I'm like, this is another funny story, actually, because when I was a kid, I screamed a lot. I had a lot of passion and energy. Mm. And my mom took me to the doctor. She's like, I think something's wrong with her voice, because I would lose my voice all the time. And I always have laryngitis. And so they looked in my throat or did some kind of scan. And they said, oh, she has these like polyps that have grown on her vocal cords as a result of all the screaming. And we can remove them and it'll fix her voice, but we can't do it until she's 18 because it's dangerous. So my mom's like, okay. So I get to 18 and I'm like, I don't want to change my voice. That's so weird. Like, this is my voice, you know? I'm like, it's not cancerous. There's no harm in them being in there, right? And so I have the polyps, and it's hilarious. The first time someone told me, I like your voice, I thought, thank you, God, for those polyps and all of that screaming as a kid. Like, it's just so funny. So anyways, that's a silly one, but it really shows the example of all of the things adding up, and, you know, the right people will find you. And that's what I believe, really.
For sure. And that's another bit of the inner work, like that competition thing. I wholeheartedly, with every fiber of my being, believe that there is more than enough in this world to go around for everybody. I went through this shit when I decided I was leaving corporate and jumping into and starting my photography business. I had people saying to me, you're going to be a photographer? There's so many photographers out there. And it got in my head. I let it get in my head and it ate away at me. And I started thinking, should I be doing this? Is this a wise choice? Da, 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 all the things. I ended up doing it, but even the first almost 2 years of my entrepreneurial journey, I was wavering back and forth. What the fuck did I do? Should I have done this? The competition mindset. Look, I'm not where these other photographers are. And it was constantly playing in my head and playing on my mind. And I got to a point where it's like, okay, you know, there were times where I wanted to just throw in the towel and give it up and go back to work, exactly what you were saying earlier. But I got to a point through mentorship and through practicing in my own head, in my own mind, that, you know what? Fuck that. There's no competition out there. No one else sees things the way I do through the lens. No one else has my eyes. No one else provides the customer or client service that I do, because they can't, because they're not me.
Yeah.
And it's a matter of getting to that point and realizing that the only competition there is me. As long as I can look back on my journey in my work and see that I've grown, I've improved, my work has gotten better, that's the only competition there is. And that's the way everyone should look at it. Although, again, it's very hard to get into that headspace. It takes work. It took me almost 2 years to get to that point. With mentorship, with guidance, it's a hard fucking road. But once I got to that point, fuck, I was able to learn to turn the noise down internally. All the external shit was nothing. That's a cakewalk. That doesn't even bother me. I don't give a shit. But there's so many struggles that we face and go through. And it's different for everybody because we're all unique. But if you can learn to persevere and get through those struggles and not throw in the towel when times get tough, you're set. It's again, but as you said too, we're constantly working on ourselves. We are always evolving and growing as human beings. So the work's never done.
Yeah. And if it was, like, what would be the point, right?
Yeah.
Like, life is about evolving and growing. It would be kind of boring if there was a challenge.
Yeah, exactly. For sure. What, in your opinion, is one of the most important skill sets or qualities in a coach?
Being a good listener. I think that most people listen to respond in general in life.
Yes.
So it's that, you know, oh my God, I have a story that I can tell after this that relates to that thing. And it's just natural. It's so natural.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
But as a coach, it's about them and the client and what they need and the direction that they need to go in, not what you want to say or you have to say. So you really have to learn. I remember when I first started, I had a hard time not interrupting people. And I realized that this was something I did in my personal life too. And I realized that my parents sometimes interrupt each other. So I must have saw that growing up. I would bite my tongue. I would literally, and that I couldn't talk until they were completely done. And then instead of thinking, what does Jacqueline want to say? What is Jacqueline's story or advice, or, you know, be the hero? I would use some of these coaching skill sets, like mirroring back what they say to me and, you know, maybe offering a perspective shift or, you know, some of these things that didn't come as naturally to me. I think they are practice skills that are really important if you're leading a coaching session.
Yeah. What inspires you or lights you up the most about the work you do as a coach?
Helping people create lives that they love. I feel like so many people are just mediocre, kind of miserable, kind of blah. I mean, most people I interact with, most people I know, to be quite frank. And so I want more people to feel excited about their lives, proud of their lives, and whatever impact I can make on that, whether that's one person or a million people, I want to make it because, I mean, that's the most valuable impact I could see making in the entire world, really. Happiness. That's what we're all at the end of the day. So I would say that's the number one thing.
It's sad when you think about all the people that go through life. And I was one of those people that they go into their job, they're 9 to 5, 5 days a week, waiting, hoping, praying. I can't wait till the weekend. So you're basically, when you do that, you're throwing away 5 days because you're so caught up in that, let's just get through the week and get to those 2 days. And then Sunday comes around, it's like, oh, fuck, I got to go back to work again. I don't want to go. That's a horrible way to live. It's a horrible existence. And that's all you're doing is existing. You're not living.
Yeah.
You know, I wish everyone could find that spark and do what lights them up and makes them happy and live life to the fullest. It would be such an incredible thing for everyone to find that joy.
Couldn't agree more. And there's this quote I love. I have it as my laptop background. It's Zig Ziglar. Mm-hmm. You can get everything in life you want if you will just help enough people get what they want. And I live by that.
Well, that's yet another lesson that we all need to learn as a human race, that we are here to be in and of service to others. It's not about you.
Yeah.
And when you learn to put others ahead of yourself, things will change. Your life will change. It's another piece of the work that we have to do, but it will shift everything for you once you get into that headspace.
It's beautiful.
It is. It truly is. Now, on the flip side of the good things, what is one of the most difficult parts of your job as a coach?
I think it's difficult trying to grow a business and also work in the business. So it's nothing about the coaching work in and of itself, but my big vision is to reach a lot more people than I'm reaching now and be giving a lot more speeches than I'm giving now and have a lot more podcast listeners than I have now. And so it's challenging for me to balance, you know, how many clients do I take on? And now being a soon to be new mom, you know, I'm like, do I just cut off like this? I'm already with my capacity of clients. And, you know, I think balancing this like bigger vision, I think some people, their vision itself is like, have a coaching business, have this many clients, make a full-time living. And that's amazing. For me, I just dream so big. And so I'm so eager to spend the time, you know, working on this thing or that thing or doing this outreach or this thing that's going to get me to that next level. But I want to serve the people that are already here. And so finding that balance, I would say that's the hardest thing for me.
Yeah. What are three of the most important lessons you've learned in your journey and career as a coach?
Okay. First lesson I would say is think about the long term more than the short term. In my early 20s, I was so focused on short term. And I think part of it is financial need and scarcity. And, you know, like I was trying to move out of my parents' house. My husband, who was at the time my boyfriend, really wanted to buy a house. So I had to save up money, right? And so everything was so short term. But when I learned to look at where do I want to be in 10 years and what steps do I need to take now to get there, that's when things actually started growing much faster. I started being happier, more in alignment with my vision. I felt like the things I was doing were really getting me closer. And I think that's something that in the beginning as an entrepreneur, especially if you have some sort of financial need, it's really hard to not be so focused on that next dollar, but it causes a lot of poor decisions. I made a lot of the wrong decisions because of that just weren't right for the overall health of my business and the direction I wanted to go in because I was so caught up in the short term. So that one has been huge. Number two, I would say is all around seeing every single thing that doesn't go the way I wanted it to as something better is coming and really, really believing that. I know we've talked about that a little bit already, but I would say like in business especially, I will try new ideas a lot and a lot of them won't work, right? And usually I find out why they didn't work a couple months later, a year later, and something better does indeed come. So just knowing that it's okay to put my time into something. I think I had a lot of fear around wasting time.
Right.
It's like a relationship with time scarcity. You know, I don't want to put in all this time and then this gets me nothing.
Yeah.
But I learned that putting in that time is always going to get me something. And I just have to trust that something better is coming if it's not the thing that's right in front of me. And then third lesson as a coach, I would say is the more that you can just be genuine and help other people, the more that you will receive. I think for a while, I was trained by all of these courses and programs. You don't want to give too much away, or you don't want to help too much, or, you know, you have to ask for the sale every 5 minutes or whatever it was. Right. But the more I just like started creating content to help people, people will be like, oh my gosh, how can I work with you? Right. Like they want to learn from me. And so I've just found it's a lot more about being genuine than it is about trying to like gatekeep or constantly be selling. I think it's important to sell as a business owner, and without sales, you don't have a business. So it's not to be afraid of sales or anything like that, but more so to make the priority to give before selling, and really seeing that as like your main goal and knowing that when you give people value, the right people are going to want to pay you and hire you. That's been a really important lesson as well. So those would be the biggest three.
Love it. Thank you for sharing those. Now, vulnerability is a very powerful force in personal growth. How do you create a safe and open space for clients to explore their vulnerability and foster self-discovery?
I think it's about trust. So the person that hires you has to trust you and trust that everything's going to be confidential, that you will not judge them. And I think that comes over time. So in a first session with someone, they might share something that makes them a little like, oh, is she going to judge me? And they're going to look at my reaction to that, right? They're going to look at my facial expression. They're going to look at the way I respond. And if they can feel that I am fully open and have no judgment, that really is something that they then take unconsciously and will open up more and more and more. On a more tactical level, building rapport is a skill and something that in my coaching certification, we actually learned how to, you know, at the beginning of a call, actually model someone's body language and model someone's tone and their breathing and all of these things to help them feel connected to you. So that's something that sometimes if someone feels a little bit more disconnected, I'll try that technical skill more, just to try to build that. But I would say it's trust that comes over time. And I think a lot of people who are going to pay you and pay money to you, they have a little bit of trust they've established from your content, from the things you've already done. And so that's really good baseline to start with, I would say.
Beautiful. Now, empathy is a strength and important piece of coaching as well. But maintaining boundaries is crucial. So how do you strike a balance between being empathetic and establishing healthy boundaries in your coaching relationships?
This is a hard one for me. I used to be available all the time. I would be answering clients on a Saturday night at 11 p.m. and it just felt bad to me, not only for my own mental health, but for theirs. I thought, how is this helping them? They're so dependent on me and what Jacqueline thinks and how Jacqueline would respond instead of empowering them with the tools to do it themselves. And so I got to a point where I asked myself, what is best for me? And what was best for me was to have our coaching sessions and have them go run with it. And they don't need to message me 100 times or, you know, ask me a bunch of questions. And if they have a question, then they can save it. And we have a call the next week, right? And I also ironically realized it was better for them. And this is something I found a lot in business and in life. Sometimes, most of the time, things that are best for me are also best for the other party. It's like sometimes you probably experience this. There's a call on your calendar that you don't want to do it for some reason or another. Not that you don't want to talk to that person, but that day, it's just not good on your schedule. You got something going on, but you don't want to cancel. So you're like leaving it be there. And then the person emails you, I'm so sorry. Can we move our call to next week? You're like, oh, it's better for me. It's better for you. Of course this happened, right? Well, the same is true oftentimes with other things. And I found that with coaching, I found that my clients are just much more self-sufficient and empowered and actually use the tools versus being so reliant on me. And my goal isn't that you stay a client for 5 years. My goal is that you learn the tools and go apply them in your life. And if you want coaching because you love coaching, I'm always here, but that's not the main goal. The main goal is like go run with them. And so I set boundaries by clearly articulating like this is what's included and this is what's not included. And that was hard at first, especially with clients that had been previously experiencing, you know, you can contact me anytime to
the available Jacqueline.
Right. To, hey, we're going to talk during this hour. If you have questions outside of that, write them down and bring them to the next hour.
Yeah.
And it was challenging, but worth the while for everyone involved.
Looking ahead, what legacy and positive impact do you hope to leave through your coaching practice and entrepreneurial endeavors?
I hope to leave a lot of books that people read years after I am no longer living. I think that that's a beautiful legacy. I love reading great books and knowing the person, you know, lived 100 years ago and their knowledge and wisdom is still something that is just as powerful today. Even if some of the words and the stories they tell are not modern or relevant, like Napoleon Hill comes to mind as a great example.
Yes.
So, I want to keep writing books in my career and really be able to leave that legacy of writing because I feel like it's something that's really timeless. I'm not sure what podcasts will be like in, you know, 100 years, but I have a pretty good feeling, you know, we have the track record of books that they'll still be quite popular and accessible.
For sure. I want to jump in and discuss a little bit about your TEDx talk and that whole experience. Now, of course, getting a TEDx is a huge dream and goal for a lot of people out there. Was this something that was a bucket list item for you?
Totally. It was 100% on my vision board.
Okay. So how did the opportunity, first of all, come up for you to get on that red dot and share your story?
Yeah. I love this story because the answer is I was relentless about getting a TEDx talk. I decided that this was the year I was going to get one. And yeah. I just started applying. I Google searched the call for speakers. I joined Facebook groups, anything I could. I told everyone I knew that my goal for the year was to land a TEDx talk. And I was rejected from so many. And I would take a lot of time on each application because they all had different themes. Mm-hmm. And it's not like I had a talk in mind either. It's not like I was like, I have this great idea I want to share. I was speaking, but it's not like I was giving these huge keynotes or anything at the time. This was back in 2020. So I was about a year into like professional speaking and getting paid to speak. So it wasn't like I had a ton of experience, but I had some. And I would look at every theme and I would just come up with ideas and I would take the time. And it was a big commitment. It took a lot of time, but finally someone read my application and the specific talk I put together for their theme and thought, this is great. And I got selected. And then COVID threw a total wrench in it because, 3 weeks before the talk, it got postponed because it was supposed to be at the end of March 2020. And it ended up being in August 2020, filmed professionally in person at a studio, live streamed on YouTube to the audience. So it wasn't quite the normal experience of a TEDx. And I think maybe I'll do another one someday that's more normal.
That full experience.
Yeah. but it was really just about commitment, like deciding. And you have to be, there's so many things you might want to do. I think this is hard. And this is something I face still to this day. You have to really decide, okay, out of all the things I want to do, you know, which are like top priorities for me and which am I willing to put in hours every single week, even if it takes 2 years. It needs to be a goal where you're like, if this takes 5 years and I spend 3 hours a week every, let's say you block out, you know, from 9 to noon every Friday morning, you're going to work on your TEDx dream or your book dream or your whatever dream that you have, right? And you have to be willing. I'm willing to do this for 10 years, even if I don't get one. That's how important it is to me. Then you're going to get one, right? Yeah. I think that's what it's about.
Yeah. So can you share a little bit about your talk, the inspiration, what the title is?
Yeah.
What it was about?
Absolutely. It is all about courage. And the theme of the event was pushing forward. And I asked myself, it was an ironic theme because they didn't know COVID was happening when they set the theme, but then it became such a prominent part of it. I asked myself, you know, what is the thing that most people need to move forward? And it was courage. And I wondered, why was it in the moment that I was this close to giving up on my dreams that I didn't give up? And why is it that other people do give up? Why is it that when people, excuse me,
bless you,
remnant of the flu, thank you. Why is it that when two people can be in the same exact situation and one person can have the resilience to bounce back, but someone else will give up? And I really boiled that word down to courage. And I wanted to better understand, where does courage come from? And I didn't know the answer. It's not like I thought, it was kind of like I was a scientist and I was very curious. And so I thought, well, let me study where my courage came from. And as I mentioned earlier, I'm a big journaler and I have a lot of my journals. So I was able to go back and actually sometimes when I'm feeling particularly bad, I journal on my phone because I don't have a journal with me. I'm like in a public place. I just open a note and I brain dump. I could be in a bathroom stall. I could be anywhere. I just have to get it out. And so I found this particular note on my phone that I had written in 2018 about wanting to give up on my business. It was very long and detailed and filled with a lot of pain. But I noticed a really interesting theme, and it was despite all of the pain, it was also filled with a lot of self-belief. So it would say things like, I don't want to give up on my business because I know I can do this. And I thought courage is about that self-belief, but it's not about being fearless as most people think. And so the talk is called The Courage Equation. And the courage equation that I created is courage equals belief greater than fear. So I wanted to encourage people that you don't have to be fearless, but if you just work on your self-belief, just so it's this much stronger than your fear, then you can take action in that moment. And you can do it over and over and over again, even breaking it down into small things. So one of the examples I give was I ran a marathon, and 3 weeks before the marathon, I found out that I most likely had a stress fracture. But I had done the training for 5 months. I was so into it. I was also running for a friend who had recently passed away from cancer on the American Cancer Society team. So I was very like committed to this, raised all this money and, you know, just so many reasons why I wanted to run it anyway. And so I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to run it anyway. It's already fractured. What's the difference? I mean, how much worse can it get? That was my thought. And everything was fine until about mile 11. I was able to get through the first 11 miles, mild discomfort. Mile 11, I'm like, oh man, I don't think I can do this. Thinking about how much longer I have to go, another 15 miles. And my self-talk in that moment was so life-changing because I said to myself, maybe you can't finish. Maybe you can't. But can you take the next step? And my answer was yes. And so I would take one more step. And I just kept asking myself, just take the next step as long as you can take the next step. And I did it over and over and over and over again for the next 15 miles. And I finished the race. And I thought about how in each moment I had the self-belief to take just one more step. So it's not about having this insane level of confidence and, you know, believing that you can do all of these crazy things. Break it down. Can you take the next step? And so I really want it to make it tangible for people to know that like wherever they're at is enough and they're this close to pushing forward and they're this close to courage. They just need that little bit of self-belief. So that's the intention with the talk.
Awesome. I love it. Thank you for sharing that. Now, let's jump into a little bit about your journey into becoming an author. As mentioned off the top, you are a 2-time international best-selling author. What inspired you to actually sit down and write your books? And what is the subject matter and titles of the book? How long did it take you to write them?
Yeah, another non-traditional story. But I think this is where fate comes in. So back to college, senior year, when I decided I was going to start a business, I thought I should sign up for an entrepreneurship class. I went to Georgetown, and at the time, believe it or not, there was only one entrepreneurship class in the whole school. Now there's a minor and all these things. Back then, it was very new to the entrepreneurial space. So the one entrepreneurship class was called Launching the Venture. It was supposed to be about launching a business idea, coming up with a business plan, pitching it, all these things. So I signed up for the class, and on the first day of class, my professor says that, you know, he had actually resigned from this class. He's an adjunct professor. He has his own business. And he thought that this class was a total waste of his time because he would help students come up with a fake business idea. They never launched it. They created a PowerPoint. And that was the extent of the class. So what did they actually learn, right?
Right.
So he had gone at the end of the last semester to the dean and said, look, I just don't think that this class is really anything super special. I don't feel really connected to it. So I'm going to resign. She said, please don't resign. You're our entrepreneurship professor. Please, we will give you full freedom. Do whatever you want with the class. If you need some funding, whatever you need. How could you teach the kids entrepreneurship in a classroom setting? So he's like, okay, I'll think about it. So he's chatting with different friends who are entrepreneurs and trying to figure out, you know, what do we all have in common? And they all had one thing in common. They had all written and published books. And he was like, you know, I think the process of choosing a target audience, then like actually marketing the book, selling the book, right? All of those things, creating the content that's actually going to resonate with the target audience is really like a mini business. Mm-hmm. I think it would be a great way to teach the students entrepreneurship. So on the first day of class, he tells us that our assignment for the year, it was a year long class, was going to be to write a book. Half the class drops. I call my parents. I tell them that I'm writing a book. Now, to preface this, I have very supportive parents. Like everything I've ever said I wanted to do in my life, they're like, you got this. But I've never been good at writing. So when I went to college, I remember like I needed so much help on my college essays, like the whole thing. I was never really – English was probably my lowest grade compared to math and the other classes. I've always kind of struggled with writing. So my mom says to me, you know, Jacqueline, I'd be more confident if you told me you were running for president than writing a book. And so that kind of shares with you that you don't have to be an expert at it, whatever it is you want to do, whether it's writing a book or something else. You can start as a beginner and you can get better with practice. And I do believe in going with things you're naturally talented at. I think speaking comes much more naturally to me. But I've actually fallen in love with writing, and I've gotten pretty good at writing from writing. So anyways, that first year wrote the book. My first book is called The Cusp Method, and it's a method I created to help people who are struggling with their relationship with food, with that yo-yo dieting, inspired by my struggle with disordered eating in college. I interview a lot of psychologists and dietitians about the different challenges, and I share my stories. So kind of my first book sharing, like, here are my own personal struggles, here's how I solve them, which is kind of cool because that's basically what I do for a living now, and I didn't know it then. And then I wrote my second book a couple years later, 2019, called Stop Getting in Your Own Way, and I wrote it for female entrepreneurs to help them overcome all of the bad habits and limiting beliefs that for a long time caused me to have so many business failures. And once I ditched them, I was actually able to have a profitable business. And so I wanted to put that into writing. So again, just sharing, like, these are things I struggled with and this is how I fixed them. And I love writing. And my third book has been on the horizon for quite some time. I start it, I stop it, I come up with different topic ideas. I don't know how I'm going to publish it because, you know, there's all the different paths. So it'll be coming, but not quite fully ready to be revealed yet. Still in the works.
Yeah. Were the other two self-published?
So there, my professor started his own publishing company.
Okay.
And so published through him. A lot of doing the work yourself, though. They had like some minimal, you know, editing support and things, but it wasn't super extensive. So yeah, just kind of thinking about what's next for me.
Now, you're also the host of a podcast, you've mentioned. Can you share a little bit about that? What's the name of your podcast? Is it interview style, solo, a mix of both? And what's it all about? What inspired you to start a podcast?
Yeah, it's called Spark Your Light, and it is about helping women connect to that feeling where they feel sparked in everyday life, helping more women really find paths. So we talk about manifestation, we talk about goal setting, we talk about new mindset perspectives, anything to help you really get to that place where you feel sparked in everyday life. And I started it because I had a lot of people enjoying my content on Instagram at the time. This was back in 2019. I don't even think TikTok was around yet. And I wanted to elaborate on it more. And I was already speaking on stages, so I knew that I liked speaking, and I just thought this is the perfect platform for me. And it really is. It's one of my favorite things in the entire world that I get to do. So I love it. I'm really grateful. And it is a lot of solo episodes, about maybe one guest a month or so. So I like to bring different guests on topics that my listeners kind of request or all kind of have common interest around. And then the rest of it is a lot of how-to and teaching and educating.
Okay. Beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. What would you say is one of the most important things you've learned in your life? And what was your life like before you learned it? And what was your life like after learning it?
One of the most important things I've learned is that all things that are easy now were once hard for you. And so in order to create an easy life, which most of us are ultimately seeking on some level, the answer is to do the hard things. But most people, myself included in the past, think that the answer is to take the easy way out. And so even though I did the hard thing of having a business, I always had this part of me that wanted to take the easy way. How can I make this easy? And I would avoid doing things that seemed arduous, that seemed like they were going to take many years before I saw a payoff, right? And it created more hard, ironically. And I realized that everything in my life, when the first time I drove a car, it was hard. Now it's easy. The first time I wrote a book, oh my gosh, it was so hard. But now when I sit down to write, I love it. It's like, oh my God, if I could just go to a coffee shop and write every day and didn't have anything else to do, like, that sounds like a dream, right? And so it's so funny how the things that we believe are going to make our life easier actually make them harder, but embracing the hard things from the beginning ultimately create more ease. And since I've embraced that concept, I've just propelled myself forward, really. And I've enjoyed doing it. And the most ironic thing of all is that I found so much joy doing the hard things. My husband and I had a firsthand experience with this in December, so not too long ago. We were at the Christmas parade in our town, and basically each business that's kind of on the parade route usually gives something for free to the community for the parade. And so our small ice cream shop was giving away some holiday ice cream flavors. We had an employee there. So we're like, okay, everything's fine. We can go easy route and enjoy the parade, stand with our family, a bunch of nieces and nephews, you know, see them, their faces while Santa goes by, whatever. And I go over to my husband and I say, there's people inside the store. And he's like, what? I'm like, yeah, there's like all these people inside the store because we have a table outside. We're giving away stuff. And I was like, can you go kick them out? Because like, I don't want anyone stealing anything, whatever. He says, kick them out. You better go serve them. So I go in the store and I get behind the counter and I start scooping ice cream and taking orders. And 3 hours later, we have been nonstop busy, lying down the block in the middle of December in a cold Philadelphia climate where we have barely done any sales all winter. And we looked at each other on Sunday after the weekend was over. And sometimes we do this where we reflect, you know, what was your favorite part of the weekend? And we both said it was working. And we had this idea in our head that we didn't want to work in our business. We had employees and this was going to be passive and all these things. Yet that was our favorite part of the weekend. And so I've learned that sometimes doing the hard thing can also be the most rewarding. And so by embracing that, not only have I made amazing progress in all of my goals, but I've been happier, ironically.
Yeah. Beautiful. What do you think your unique skill set or superpower is that's helped you become successful?
I think it's very natural for me to take stories and metaphors and turn them into lessons for people, which psychologically lands well with people's unconscious mind and helps them learn things. And it's just something I kind of do without thinking. I don't need to it's just something I'm naturally good at. So I think we all have our natural skills. That's probably my best one, which makes sense why I do what I do, I think.
Speaking of success, how do you define that word? What does the word success mean to you?
For me, success is really about whatever makes you happy is a strong word because it's not going to be happy every day. But like whatever your personal goals are that are in alignment with your life and values that you want. And so I feel so successful just because I have a business that is profitable, that pays me a salary, that I get to do work I enjoy. Does it mean that I'm making my dream amount of money or that I'm reaching my dream amount of people? No, that's a different level of success, right? Mm-hmm. And I felt successful, to be honest. Maybe I didn't feel it then, but I know I feel it now looking back. And I know I would feel it in the future because of what I know now, even when I was failing, because for me, success was trying. For me, success was honoring myself, was putting myself out there, was going for my dreams. So I think it's going to be a different mark for everyone. But the best thing you can do is to honor the process and honor where you are. And if you can feel true pride in where you are, it's not going to hold you back. I think I used to be afraid that if I felt proud of where I was now, I would get comfortable and I wouldn't keep moving forward towards my goals. I actually feel more propelled. I feel more prepared. I feel more capable because of that sense of pride. So that's where I create my success from.
Thank you for sharing that. What does the word empowerment mean to you?
Empowerment, I picture a fire inside of you where you feel capable, where you feel capable of whatever it is that you want to do in your life. That's what empowerment is all about for me.
Love it. Okay, we're going to jump into a little rapid fire section here. So the next grouping of questions just be 2-3 forward answer type thing, okay? How would you describe yourself in one word?
Bright.
If you could teach the world one thing, what would it be?
Resilience.
What is the one thing you want but cannot buy with money?
Health for my family.
If you could be remembered for one thing, what would it be?
Helping people be happier.
And that concludes our rapid fire section. I'm trying something new today. I've never done.
I love it.
I usually, as you know, I send the questions out ahead of time, but this time I did that for you, but I created a question after, just like a money question or a surprise question, we'll say, that I'm going to see how this goes over, how it lands, by keeping that question back and then just surprising the guest with a question just out of the blue. So if you had 24 hours on Earth left, what would you do with that 24 hours?
Spend it with the people I love and give all my money away.
Okay, beautiful. Jacqueline, what is an unexpected blessing or occurrence in your life that you're grateful for?
So many. Oh, I would say unexpected. I would say my marriage. I would say that I knew when I was getting married that I was moving a happy relationship to the next level. But I didn't know how we would grow together and evolve as adults, as entrepreneurs, as now parents. And I think we're lucky. I always say that we're lucky. I don't take it for granted that some people grow apart and some people have a lot of struggles and challenges. And I always say, like, I didn't know it could be this good. And I think that if you're lucky enough to be married to someone who uplifts you and supports you and really helps you move forward towards your goals, I mean, it's probably one of the top and most important blessings, because that's the person you're with most of the time. It's the person you spend most of your time with. So they influence you greatly. So I would say that's probably in some sense unexpected about how good it could actually be, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. What is your why?
Again, it's just that desire to avoid regret and live a life that really reaches my full potential.
Yeah. Your dad really struck a chord with you with that one.
He did. Sure. Yeah. And he knows it. I always tell him. I'm like, I talk about you in my speeches.
If you could step into my shoes, what question would you have asked yourself that I didn't ask you?
Something I like to think about, maybe it's just a metaphor that really lands with me, but if you could like bottle up something and give it to the world, what would it be?
That's interesting.
I just feel like if we could like take a feeling or a belief, I just imagine like you're handing out like water bottles and you could just give it to everyone. Like what would that one be?
Love.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah, the world needs it. And that is the highest vibration on the planet. So that's what I would give.
Yeah,
I would give love. I love that question, actually. That's a great, I'm going to steal that.
Yeah, I always think about it. That's just like a way, like whenever I think about a feeling or a belief I'm so passionate about, I just want to bottle this up. I might have even said it on this interview. I always think that. So yeah.
That is an awesome question. I am definitely going to steal that from you.
Please do.
If you had the opportunity to sit down and have a 1-hour conversation with one woman, any woman in the world, who would it be and why?
I think Sarah Blakely. I'm really impressed with her success and her journey and just all of the knowledge that she has. And I just think that she has so much to share.
If you could go back and give your younger self one piece of advice, what would that piece of advice be?
Focus on the long term. Stop chasing the short term things. You'll be where you want to be much quicker.
Play the long game always. Always. Yep. Lastly, Jacqueline, if you were to deliver your last 30-second speech to the world, your tribe, your people, your corner of the world, what would that last 30 seconds sound like? What words of wisdom would you impart?
No matter if it looks like it's not working, if it looks like you're going down a dark road and you don't know what steps to take, just keep going and keep trusting that it's always this or something better. Everything is happening for you, not to you. And never, never, never give up, because you are this close to your dreams. Don't give up 5 seconds before the miracle.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Jacqueline. It has been an absolute pleasure and honor having the opportunity to sit down and speak with you and share in your story and your journey and the beautiful light you put out into the world. I am honored to have had this opportunity and so grateful to have you as a member of the Empowerography community. Thank you for being here with me today. I appreciate you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Could you please share with the audience where they can connect with you if they want to learn more about you or work with you?
Yeah, I'm Jacqueline T. Gallo on all the social media platforms. And again, my podcast is called Spark Your Light and my website is jacquelinegallo.com.
Beautiful. We'll put all that information in the show notes, of course, but I just wanted to share that as well. Once again, my name is Brad Welsh, host of your Empowerography podcast. Today, my guest has been Jacqueline Gallo. She is a two-time best-selling author, a podcast host, a life coach, and a TEDx speaker. Thank you so much for your time, Jacqueline. I hope you have a wonderful rest of the day. Thank you very much for listening to this podcast. If you haven't yet, please be sure to subscribe, rate, review, and share with all your friends. You can find me at visiophoria.ca and follow me on Instagram at Empowerography Podcast and on Facebook at Empowerography. Please join me next time for another inspirational story from yet another amazing woman.